This is Marcelo Pico, the editor-in-chief of Talk Film Society and your host for the Talk Film Society Festival. Welcome to Day 13, the final day, the closing night of this podcast series, the Talk Film Society Festival 2020. My guest for this episode, the final guest, the final participant in this festival is Rachel Housechild, a contributor at Talk Film Society, a great person to talk to, as you'll find out here. We talk about Dr. Sleep. That was her pick for the fest. You also find out that it was on a list of films I gave to her as suggestions for films to talk about at for the festival. And I highly suggested she picked Dr. Sleep because, hey, who doesn't love Dr. Sleep and who doesn't love Mike Flanagan? You get a lot of that conversation in this episode. Her and I discussing the amazing Mike Flanagan and Dr. Sleep and everything in between. This leads me to bring up the fact that I wrote something about Dr. Sleep, which I am proud of, and you can read over on our Patreon, patreon.com/talkfilmsociety. That Dr. Sleep piece I wrote is in the Talk Film Society Festival program. You can access that if you support us on the Patreon. So please do. If you've enjoyed these episodes, if you enjoyed the work that's been put into putting this podcast series out, then I hope you appreciate the work that was put in putting that program together, putting all that work from great writers and contributors and podcast hosts that went into the program. So please check it out if you can. Support us there at the Patreon, patreon.com/talkfilmsociety. And if you want to go back and look at that full list of episodes that we've published, go to our site, talkfilmsociety.com/TFSFest. You'll get a glimpse of all those episodes, the past 13 days of great talk, great films. Like I said in the last episodes, thank you for those. Thank you to those who have listened to all these, or any number of these, or just the one, or just this one. Thank you for listening. I don't know what else to say at the end of this. I spent the last week and a half just editing episodes, seemingly nonstop. And I'm glad it's over. For one, I can take a little break, and I'm also glad that it's all out. It's all out there for people to listen to, for people to enjoy, and I hope they do, because it was fun recording them. I had a good time editing them. Well, good in the relative sense. I mean, it was fun listening back. The feedback that I've gotten so far has been good. So I'm happy with how it turned out. So until next year. Let's do it again, or maybe we'll do something, you know, sooner than that, something like this podcast series. But thank you, and that's all I have to say. Now for the closing night film, the last film in this series, the last film of the Talk from Society Festival 2020. It's Dr. Sleep. It's good. I'll just say, like, as of this recording, it's on HBO Max. Both cuts. Pick one. Watch it if you haven't. Listen to this episode along with it. That's it. Please enjoy me and Rachel discussing Dr. Sleep, the closing night film for the Talk Film Society Festival 2020. Rachel, thanks for joining us at the Talk Film Society Festival.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy to talk to you about this movie. I mean, it's two factors here. Love talking to you, Rachel. And this movie, I love it, and happy to talk about it. So for this, I I think I sent over to you some suggestions as to, you know, what to talk about, you know, some, I think, choices. And one stuck out, right? One.
Oh,
and also, I kind of suggested, you know, maybe we should talk about this.
Pushed it my way a bit.
Only if you were willing. But
I was, 100%.
Why don't you tell us the movie we're going to be talking about today?
We are going to be talking about Mike Flanagan's Dr. Sleep.
Yes, Dr. Sleep.
So excited.
From last year, from 2019, Dr. Sleep. Why don't I just ask you, tell me, I guess your general feelings about Dr. Sleep. Did you catch it in theaters last year?
We did, yeah. I did go see it in the theater. I think it was more of a later screening. And it's very interesting because that experience alone, I was expecting, you know, horror movies and theater crowds sometimes don't blend very well. But we had a very respectful experience with the crowd. There's no screaming or anything like that. But I enjoyed it more than my boyfriend did. But and then revisiting it, it just solidified, like, yeah, this movie is great. And Mike Flanagan is probably one of my favorite working horror directors right now.
I mean, let's talk about Mike Flanagan here for a second, because I also love him. It kind of like snuck up on me, like how great he was, because like when I think the first movie of his I saw was Yuiji Origin of Evil, right? And I came into that movie just expecting something not good, because it's the sequel to a movie that I had not seen, but I heard it was bad. And I'm like, okay, what could this possibly be? And I saw it in a theater, and I was just like, I was like, wow, this is a lot better than I expected. I think this movie's like great. And then after
it's very good.
And then after that, like, I saw Gerald's Game, and that made my top 10 of that year. I went back to see Oculus. That was amazing. Hush. I mean, he's like, yeah, at this point, like batting 1,000. Tell me, Rachel, about, I'm guessing, your love for Michael Flanagan.
Well, I first was introduced to Mike Flanagan, I believe, from his film Absentia, which is really great. I do have to revisit it because I don't remember a lot, but I just remember being like pretty blown away by it in regards to horror. And then I would say Hush also came after that. I kind of started early career of his, watched majority of it, and then I went back to Oculus maybe last year.
Right.
Not that long ago, honestly. Worth it as well. And I love his stuff, and I have such a hot take on him that I like can't, I'm so afraid to even like tell anybody because they're just gonna, you know, slaughter me or something like that. But Ouija is another one where it was like, oh, how could this be good? It's kind of like this hokey kind of movie sequel, and then you watch and you're like, wait, what did I just watch? Because this is so much better than I was expecting. And then yeah, Gerald's Game. Stomach turning at one part. If you know, you know.
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, I just love his direction, and I love that he doesn't use a lot of jump scares in order to continue his story. Like it's very minimal what he uses in terms of that. And I just love his characters and everything that I have seen so far. So I'm just Dr. Sleep with his additions to the story and from the book, obviously. But I just think he's really great, and he really just understands what he wants. And I like his outcomes, and I can't wait to see what else he's got.
Oh yeah, exactly. Have you by chance seen his show, The Haunting of Hill House?
Oh, Oh yes, and I cannot wait for Bly Manor.
Yeah, that's
we're gonna rewatch Haunting of Hill House definitely before Bly Manor rolls around. But man, that show is amazing.
That's actually a big blind spot for me. As much as I love Flanagan, I have not yet sat down to watch all of Hill House, which I have to. And
I think you'll like it.
Yeah, I'm sure I will, because like it's oh my gosh, like again, going back to Gerald's Game and kind of like connecting to what you're saying about characters. I think what works about like something like Gerald's Game and also Dr. Sleep is the fact that it's not like it does have its moments, like its horror moments.
Mm-hmm.
There are like maybe yes a few jump scares, but it's like the characters that make it work. And yes. like a performance by Carla Gugino in Gerald's Game. I think that might have been my favorite performance of that year of what was it 2017? It's saying a lot that it came from, you know, a horror movie, but to me it's a horror movie plus just a fantastic, you know, female character drama too.
I was just gonna say it's more drama to me than horror, but it's definitely has this underlining horror element that just, you know, it's very what's the word that I'm trying to look for, but it's very unnerving. Basically.
Yes.
And that's what happens with characters and then in Hill House. I'm not going to spoil anything for you.
No, yes, thank you.
But it's very heavily character driven and everybody does such a wonderful job. And there are spooky moments. There might be at least one jump scare that still gets me out of that entire series, but there's not many. So it is a horror, but I feel it's more heavily drawn to on the dramatic element of the family and a family drama rather than being a haunted house TV show.
Yeah, which leads us into like Dr. Sleep. It's like speaking of characters, I guess we can give a breakdown of what the plot is before we do a post movie discussion in the next segment. Do you want to break down what happens like in Dr. Sleep, Rachel?
Sure. Yeah. So basically, Dr. Sleep is about Danny Torrance and his life post. As we know of The Shining, so everything that happened in The Shining and how he copes with his quote unquote The Shining, and then how he ends up going into becoming an alcoholic and trying to get through that, and then meeting another girl and who has this ability, but also there are these hunters or these prowess people that are preying on the shining of these individuals, so it gives them life. So it's confronting the past and the present and melding that together. And all dealing with little homages to the original that we know of.
Yes. Oh, and I should also say the theme of the festival is returns. And this is not a spoiler because it's like in the trailers and it's like, you know,
yes.
if you're going to tell a story about, you know, Danny all grown up, you have to incorporate the outlook, you know. So at one point, yes, Danny has to go back to the spot where it all happened, you know, in 1980, the events of The Shining.
Yeah. Yes.
Which we'll get more into in the in the second half. Let's talk about Stephen King, okay? Because, like, famously, King was not a huge fan of the Kubrick adaptation of his book. So much so that, like, he... I haven't seen it, but did you see that 90s Shining
miniseries?
Tell me about that, because I have yet to see it. I'm curious as hell to see that version.
It's definitely out there. I can't remember who plays the lead.
Oh my gosh!
I'm trying to remember.
I think it's like a King horror movie staple. I can't remember his name.
Yes, I'm looking this up right now before I go crazy. Stephen Weber.
That's him. Weber.
John Torrance. He's definitely above and beyond. And there are some scenes that are. I wish that were in Kubrick's version that are in this, so I understand where King is coming from. I just wish he had someone else do it because I think it would have been so much better instead of this like mini series kind of thing, to just have it like this set movie, because in a mini series then you're dragging it out more, so you're having more information, and whereas you have Kubrick's movie where you kind of have to cut some things out for timing constraints, so it's not like a 3-hour long movie. So yeah. I get what he is wanting. I'm going to stick to the Kubrick version personally. That's just my personal preference. But I can see why people liked that version. Yeah, Weber goes above and beyond, basically. So, and it's a lot more, I think I vaguely remember it as being a little bit more violent than the movie at times. It's fine, basically. It's watchable, but I'm going to stick to the movie.
Yeah. I may have to correct myself because I think earlier I said the Outlook Hotel. It's the Overlook Hotel.
Overlook.
I'm confusing it with the something else. Well, okay, the Overlook Hotel. I guess this is... I'll save this because, like, the Overlook Hotel... I don't want to say it's like a character because, you know, it kind of, but it plays such an important part in Dr. Sleep, and there's an interesting conversation I want to have, like, in the post movie discussion about like how it's handled, like, in the books versus the movies, and how that, like, comes together, like, in Flanagan's Dr. Sleep. But have you read the book Dr. Sleep, Rachel?
I unfortunately have not got the chance to. I think it came out, it became so popular, and then I completely forgot to read up on it, unfortunately. But I've heard it is pretty fantastic from what my understandings are.
Yeah, same here. I haven't read it yet. Because it's I think Flanagan, what he does so smartly in Dr. Sleep, the movie, is sort of just combine Kubrick's, you know, vision with King's vision. I think he does that so well because it does still feel very much King like while also, I mean, you get that from like the opening of Dr. Sleep. I think after
the overhead shot with that music.
Yes, and like the same, I think, title font, and then and then you do see, you know, flashbacks to what happens in, you know, The Shining, in Kubrick's version of The Shining, which is super interesting. Like, it does not, you know, stray away from Kubrick's, you know, vision.
Correct, yeah. Yeah. But the wild thing that I love about Flanagan's version is that it wasn't, like, it was recreated with new actors and actresses rather than pulling, creating some kind of fantasy or memory and pulling from Kubrick's film. So you had a whole new group set of characters playing these roles, which I thought was extremely fabulous.
Yeah, that was like something that fascinated me, like, because this came out last year, and I mean, I love The Irishman. Like, it's in my you know, top 10 of last year. But I will say it took me some time to kind of, like, you know, rewire my brain to take in that, like, de-aging technology in that movie.
Yeah.
And I'm glad those wires didn't have to, you know, be crossed again to see Dr. Sleep. Like, you know, imagine, like, Jack Nicholson de-aged, you know, playing himself in this, or, you know, any other actor, you know, de-aged. It would have been just a bit too jarring. And I love the fact that, Flanagan recast, you know, those characters with new actors. I think that's like a great touch.
And even using Henry Thomas in Dr. Sleep, who was the original Danny Torrance in The Shining, and he's now the bartender, or quote unquote his, you know, basically would be his dad in The Shining, or in the Overlook Hotel towards the end.
Yeah, that's a great touch.
It's just some fabulous little niche touches that he does, which is great. Yeah.
Oh, we should also talk about this. The theatrical cut, and it's okay. I saw this in theaters, I think, at least twice. I loved it from the get-go, but it wasn't like a huge box office hit, not as much as like Warner Brothers wanted. But it does feel like, since it came out, It's maybe had like a tiny bit of resurgence in terms of like people, more people watching. I think a reason for that is because there's that new director's cut that came out.
I didn't get to watch it because I told my boyfriend I'd wait to watch a director's cut with him because he was very upset that I was rewatching it.
Fair enough.
So I was like, all right, I'll hold off just for this time. But he's lucky. He's lucky.
I will say, I think both versions are fantastic. They are. But I'll give like a slight edge to the director's cut. And the director's cut of Dr. Sleep, it's hard for me now, having seen essentially the director's cut twice, and also the theatrical cut I saw twice too, so a total of four times.
Okay.
It's hard for me to, like, I don't know, like point out exactly what they added in to the director's cut, because it just feels so organic. Like now, instead of 2.5 hours, it's 3 hours, but it doesn't feel like it. It feels like everything is needed. So, yeah.
That's like me with Almost Famous, honestly. I will only watch a director's cut. And I think I think it happens that way with a couple director's cuts, because there's just some little things that are kind of more detailed that you think, like, originally you think, oh, that's great. And then when you see the director's cut with more detail, you're like, oh, that's even better.
Exactly. Yeah.
I did hear there was one scene, the Jacob Tremblay scene. Obviously I haven't seen the director's cut, but I heard that scene is drawn out a little bit more, which that terrifies me.
Yeah.
Just thinking about it.
Yes. Folks listening, if you're about to see this for the first time, Jacob Tremblay, I think, infamously just gets annihilated in this movie. That's not a big spoiler because he's in it for a few scenes and which I have so much to say about that too, because it's a scene that is horrific. Okay.
Extremely.
But I think Flanagan and company, they picked the right actor to do that, because I can't imagine any other child actor having to go through that. Other than Tremblay, because Tremblay, I mean, he's already just accomplished as an actor himself, and he's, you know, acted in, you know, Room, where he was also just in a different way, just completely just you know, like, gone through his own trauma there on film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he's had experience.
And for being such a young age at doing, like, being so young, I can't even imagine myself doing that now, like, that kind of scene, and at my age, even though, like, if I was an actor, obviously, but I'm not. But that, just all together, I'm like, I can't even imagine composure or even being on set watching that scene. I would probably cry, honestly.
Yeah. But seeing that sequence in the director's cut, like, I don't know. It's one of those moments where, I can tell someone's added, but it just felt as horrific. You know, they just made it, they just made it just longer. Like, I think the director's cut still plays in, like, giving you that, you know, horror, but, you know, the director's cut just adds just a bit more.
So. And it's a pivotal scene, if you think about it. It's a very big turning point in the movie, to bring together Danny and then Abra together, basically, because that was the point. That was the time where everything hit the fan, basically.
Yeah. And I love that convergence of characters of new and old.
Yes.
And it was just the addition of, like, you know, one of my favorite character actors ever is in this, Cliff Curtis. I love his role in this. He's so amazing. And also Carl Lumbly, who I've loved since watching him on Alias, you know, a decade and a half ago. A dumb thing I did was I didn't recognize him right away when I first saw this movie. I was that, you know, that is a perfect Halloran. Like, whoever's playing that, you know, is great. And then after seeing it, I was, like, writing something about this movie and looked up, just researched, and I go, wait a second, Carl Lumbly? What? Like, maybe
it's really hard to replace Scatman Crothers, I have to say, because, like, that guy's great.
Yeah.
But he did a damn good Dick Halloran.
It's an impressive performance, because I think he captures that voice. He captures that essence.
He does.
That
he
look. Does. Oh, like that role. I'll sing it. You know, I'll sing his high praises all day. But that role in particular in this movie kind of struck me as, like, if I were giving out, like, Oscars and have, like, you know, Carl Lumbly nominated, you know, in this movie for sure. It's a tremendous cast all around. We haven't even talked about.
Was actually recognized in the Oscar World Academy. Yeah. Talking to you guys.
Oh boy. Oh, it's. I mean,
the things I would say.
We could just do a whole podcast series on that alone.
Yeah. It's a great cast, though.
I know. Like, I know. We haven't even talked about Rebecca Ferguson yet.
Holy moly! Seriously, that woman. Oh my god.
When
she deserves so much.
it's amazing what she does in this as the villain, and the most believable line in this entire movie might be another character saying to Rebecca Ferguson's character, "You're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen." I go, "Yes, absolutely. I agree.
I have to agree." Rose the Hat was a beautiful villain. I'm like, you can't be this beautiful and also be this heinous of a person. But she, lo and behold, she can pull off a top hat better than probably anyone I have ever seen. I'm like, oh my lord, good gravy.
If anything would get anybody to watch this movie, it's Rebecca Ferguson in a top hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I, like, when I saw that too, and I was like, oh, that's such a good Halloween costume. Yes. So good.
And it would have been perfect to do it this Halloween, but... Nevertheless.
But alas, yes. There's always next year.
Yeah, next year for sure. Get your top hats. I mean, buy your top hats now.
Yes.
There might be a run on them next year.
True.
Yeah. I think that's enough intro. I think we've excited people enough about Dr. Sleep.
basically, just watch it, guys.
Just watch it. As of this recording, and hopefully when the fest is happening in October, it's on HBO. I mean, it just came on HBO like maybe a month or two ago, so I don't know what HBO's deals are. I don't know how long movies are on there. And if it changes, I'll cut this out. But but the great thing about it being on HBO is the two versions are on there, the theatrical cut and the director's cut. So really, folks, if you have HBO, you have no excuse.
Exactly. Yeah. And if it gets off of there, just get your Just Watch app up and go find a stream of it.
Buy it, please. I recommend buying this movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yes, let's go ahead and let people enjoy Dr. Sleep. And we'll be back after the movie if you're timing this. I wonder, because I've recorded so many of these. I wonder if anybody's timing them like that. Like hearing this segment, pausing it, watching the movie, playing the
and
next
then
segment.
Coming back?
Yeah.
Oh, they should. That'd be awesome. Should.
Please time this up like that. If you do, let me know on Twitter. But yeah, here's Dr. Sleep. Enjoy, and we'll be back for a post-movie discussion. And we're back. Whoa! You know, those 2.5 hours or 3 hours went by super fast. Wow. Honestly,
quickly.
That's not really a joke because I went in this movie not knowing the runtime, coming out of it thinking, that was like a nice crisp, like 2 hours. No, it was 2.5 hours, the theatrical cut.
I know.
It flies
by.
It did
go quickly. I remember when we were going to see, we're like, oh man, 2:32? And then coming out, we're like, that was 2:32.
On Twitter,
so it does go quickly.
Yeah, on Twitter, I said that, and I forget. Well, I know exactly who it was. Like, just berating me about, like, why are you saying this about runtimes? Who cares? I go, I care because sometimes 3-hour movies, you know, as much as I love stuff like Irishman, like maybe, you know, they need to not Irishman, but you know, other 3-hour movies, maybe you know they don't need to be 3 hours. But this, make it. I mean. That's why I'm excited to see something like Haunting of Hill House because, you know, with Flanagan and runtimes, he can go on all day for all I care.
Oh, yeah. And these are crisp, short, like hour-long episodes, I think, for Hill House, but well worth the watch.
Yes. So, Dr. Sleep, as I was alluding to in the last segment, what I find interesting is in the book The Shining, from what I remember, the Overlook Hotel burns down, right? That's like the biggest, I guess, difference, right, between the novel and the Kubrick's movie. And I'm guessing in the Shining miniseries, Rachel, they destroy the Overlook at the end, right?
I think they do. I can't remember that, honestly. It honestly has been so long since I see it, because I saw it when I was a kid and I didn't understand why there were two movies, because my dad introduced me to horror at a young age. Probably not. Well, for the better now, but at the time, you know, a little hesitant on the parenting. Yeah, from what my understandings are, it was supposed to burn down, and it obviously did not in The Shining, the movie from Kubrick. As we have seen now in Dr. Sleep, that was the case.
I think, you know, maybe, again, going back to that thing about Kubrick's vision and King's vision coming together in this, because it's obviously not burnt down. Obviously, in this universe, mm-hmm. in this adaptation, it's like still standing. And I think from what I've read in King's Dr. Sleep book, the finale takes place on the grounds of where the Overlook was standing. So there's mm-hmm. like the comparison there. But yeah, tell me what you think, Rachel, about like just how the Overlook Hotel is represented in Dr. Sleep and how it was kind of recreated for this movie.
I like how it was recreated. I think it was recreated very reverently, if that's a good word to use. it held true to what we know and from the Kubrick version. And then, you know, from the famous carpet to the 237, like everything was brought back for us to just harbor on for just a mere couple of seconds even, which was great. And I think that it was better not to go in depth into the house, really. I mean, we only kind of were in that some of the outskirts of it, really. It wasn't like, you know, going through the maze. I mean, they go through the maze, but not in depth like the Jack Nicholson that like we're used to. It's just you don't have to. We weren't sitting in that house as long as we were in The Shining. It was just enough. So it was perfect amount of time that we were in the Overlook for Dr. Sleep, to me personally.
Same with me. In the director's cut, I know, like, we spent about 30 minutes in the 3-hour runtime, which is just enough. And they save it. Like, there's some just flashes. Enough, yeah. What I love is, like, there's some flashes to the Overlook through the movie, at least in the director's cut. I think in the director's cut they had a few more like callbacks to like the bar. You know, they show the bar at the Overlook like during a few moments. You know, and then they cut back to, you know, Ewan McGregor. But yeah, it's funny to me, or at least interesting. I don't know if it's laugh out loud hilarious, but last like in the last year or two. Like, movies have not let us forget how iconic The Shining is. Like, with this.
Oh, yes.
And also Ready Player One, which, what, like 2 years ago had. Have you seen Ready Player One, Rachel?
No, I have not. Not yet.
I mean, but have you heard of The Shining sequence in that?
I think I have heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, but not. Okay, I'm not going to dive too deep into it, but it's interesting how I'll say it just it recreates a lot of The Shining in that, and it was kind of jarring to see it on the big screen, like, oh, like and then same with this, like how accurately it's like being, you know recreated, you know, presented on the big screen in like new movies. And I understand maybe some people may be like, we get it, The Shining's a classic, but I still kind of love seeing that, like seeing.
I kind of do too.
Yeah.
And even down, like, especially with Flanagan, like even down to little things where like Ewan McGregor's having the meeting with the one guy where he's like, oh, your son has, you know, whatever kind of illness. But then you look in the background, it's the same color of the wall that Jack Nicholson is having the meeting with in The Shining. Like, these little things and the little homages that don't go over the top, but it's just enough little flair for you to know, like, oh, this is still a prequel or a sequel to The Shining. But I also believe that all this new material from Rose the Hat to Abra to Danny's post Overlook life, I think makes the movie, really.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's focus on, like, you know, Abra and, like, these new characters, because, you know, as much as, like, Flanagan likes to, you know, tip his hat visually to Kubrick and that movie, like, it, I love these new characters. I love Abra as a character. Her introduction, like, her shining, like, her magic, like, that
is amazing.
Oh, it's great. And the character who plays her, Kylie Curran, I think that's it.
Curran. God, I want her to do big things.
Yes. Oh. She's incredible in this.
She's fabulous. Yeah.
I'm sure you know, like, I mean, because I'm sure there are, from what I've heard, great performances in Hill House from, like, you know, child actors.
Absolutely.
Flanagan knows how to work with actors and child actors, like, from any range, and he gets a hell of a performance out of Curran. So it's amazing. What else can we say about, like, the new characters introduced in this, Rachel?
Well, back to Abra really quick, though. I think she's though everybody, like, loves Danny Torrance and it's Ewan McGregor, I really do think the star of this movie is Abra. Yeah. And it would not be a movie without Abra. And for it being her second movie ever, like, oh my Lord. I just think she's fabulous. Just having her and seeing how in depth her quote unquote shining is, where she can transport into minds of everyone else and, like, know the things that she knows is so powerful. And it's really wonderful to see, that given to a young girl as well in a movie rather than, you know, say somebody older.
Yeah.
But, I think she's wonderful. All the incoming, new cast members are wonderful. Even, like, all the clan that Rose the Hat kind of forms together. And it's all different ages too. There's no certain demographic. There's no certain, color of anybody. Like, it's just such a variety and such a diverse cast. That's another reason why I really enjoyed it. And Flanagan's picks, again, going back to his characters.
Yeah. I can't imagine. It's at first jumping into the story, it took me just a bit just to get into the world of, like, this. Like, let's talk about the actual, like, what this, like, group of people, who's the True Knots, like what their goal is. Because at first it was, like, a bit like, whoa, we're jumping from The Shining, which was, like, more super, it was supernatural, you know, with ghosts and, you know, a place being possessed, to Dr. Sleep, where this gang of, like, almost immortals sucks the life out of other people who have magic.
People who have, have the shining ability. It's really messed up if you think about it. And then, and it's just amazing on how, like, even how they die. Like, if obviously you can shoot them, but if they don't get this life source, they're just gonna fade away, basically. It's wild.
Yeah. And I think it's somebody who, it's somebody like Flanagan who can maybe adapt that and not make it seem totally ridiculous, which I think.
Yes, I was just gonna say, like, he makes it not seem hokey and campy or anything.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes together. I don't know. It's supernatural, but a little step above. But it's not overdone. You know, it's kind of grounded with the kids, you know, or people having the shining ability.
Yeah. And again, like, going back to that Jacob Tremblay sequence, you definitely get that. I think that's like a pivotal scene. Like, kind of like we were saying, Rachel, before, like, not just the characters coming together, but you get the real sense of what this, you know, group of people can do and what their powers are and how they get their powers. It's that true sense of, like, oh, this could happen to Abra. Like, this is what, you know, these people, the evil things that these people are willing to do just to live, you know, a few years longer. It's truly terrifying. And I don't think anybody could have pulled it off better than, like, Flanagan at that point. It's,
agreed.
Yeah.
If I think of horror directors, I don't think really anybody could have kind of tackled this but Flanagan.
Yeah, it'd be tough. It'd be tough to do. Let's see. What else can we talk about? The cast. Why don't we talk? Because we haven't really talked about Ewan McGregor. I love the man.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I'm sure you do, too.
I do, too.
Yeah. It's the tragic arc that he has throughout this entire thing. And also, interesting enough, I'm programming this schedule. I say programming, like, it just means, like, rearranging the movies in a certain order. That's what it is. But, like, people are picking these movies, and they're kind of, like, random in, like, the best way possible. But it just so happened that this morning I rewatched Rachel Getting Married, and then I saw Dr. Sleep, which, before I watched them both, I'm like, a drama, horror movie, nothing in common. But they have a lot of common action, because, like,
alcoholism.
Exactly. I didn't catch that right away, that connection between the two. And it was interesting to see that play out in two different ways, in two different movies. And I guess my point is, Danny's character arc in this, again, go back to how Flanagan works with characters and story. It's another reason why I love the movie, and how well, Danny's struggles with that and with his father, how that all plays, from beginning to end. It's a great arc that Danny has.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt after you're finished watching The Shining that you think that kid's going to have a happy life. Like, you know for a fact that that kid's going to have some kind of PTSD or something like that, which then we're kind of basically shown in Dr. Sleep and how he's dealing with alcoholism. And it's tough to watch somebody even on screen try and combat that. Not only is he having these shining demons in his head, but he's also having these alcoholism demons. So it's really, his character has a lot on his shoulders, basically.
Yeah. Those moments that, that make it so real, that may seem like hokey, but, in the hands of, like, Flanagan and Ewan McGregor, like, they were completely, like, him grabbing that bottle at one point when, like, his friend has been killed and Abra's dad has been killed. Yeah, Billy's been killed. It's like, he has that bottle and he's about to put it in his mouth, he's about to drink out of it, but then he tosses it. And it works. Again, it may be a hokey scene, maybe like a Hallmark movie scene about alcoholism, but no.
Yep. Yeah, I was just going to say, it's probably cliched and it's seen a lot, but it also is a testament to his character to see how much he's been able to overcome.
Exactly, yeah. I guess we should talk about the ending of this, since we're doing, like, a spoiler movie discussion.
Yeah. This is probably going to be the biggest spoiler section ever for this movie, at least.
yeah, the ending. I'll toss it to you, because, like, I'm kind of at a loss, because I love the ending, but it's just hard for me to dig into it because it's just a lot. It's a lot.
It's a heavy ending, honestly, if you think about it. I mean, basically what needs to happen is that Danny's demons need to be locked up again, and they need to be they have to go away. It's got to end, because obviously it's just going to continue. So they lead Rose the Hat, because she's at this point, she's the only one left because all of her other comrades are gone. So they have to lead her to the Overlook Hotel to basically trap her in there with everybody else that was there prior, that we have all been introduced to from The Shining, which Flanagan brings back, obviously, as we had discussed before, in new actor form, which is still fascinating to me. There's a couple of wild happenings in there, Danny gets the axe, which, is a testament to his dad from the first film. He goes to the bar and has issues with potentially drinking, but he doesn't do it. So again, there's that another testament to his character. And then, as we discussed prior, not a, a spoiler since we discussed it, but the Overlook then goes up in flames.
Yeah. Yeah. And what strikes me, and it's something, you know, I haven't read the Dr. Sleep book, but I don't know. If I'm wrong about this, then please somebody correct me, you know, online. But I have to imagine that the moment when Danny sees his mom, you know, as he's in the Overlook and it's like burning down, I that feels very Flanagan to me. It feels very much like a moment, you know, of like sincerity and a beautiful character moment that I think only somebody like Flanagan can add in to, you know, a movie like this. And I think that's
the mother,
it's a the beautiful mother-son moment.
Relationship.
Yeah.
Which he also brings, he does a mother-son relationship, like a couple of scenes in Haunting of Hill House as well, which are very emotional, extremely emotional.
Ah, see, it's why I love the guy. He is not afraid to add stuff in, you know, moments like that in his, you know, horror movies.
Yeah, quote unquote horror. Yeah,
I know, quote unquote. That's what I'm gonna say. You know,
it's really wild.
Yeah, it's wild. I know there was talk about Flanagan possibly doing a prequel with Halloran's character, which I'm not sure what the status is of that.
I think it's on his IMDb as in pre.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like I hope it happens. I hope he continues to work. You know, period. That's one thing. And also, I hope he continues to kind of delve into this world. If he doesn't, then give him another Stephen King adaptation because he's amazing at them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, at this point, I'll just let him do anything, really.
Exactly, yeah. I think...
I find his style and how he... just how he puts everything together as an end result is just so... I don't know. I'm always all for it, basically.
Yeah. So as we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts on Flanagan's Dr. Sleep, Rachel?
I just think Dr. Sleep is a pretty solid sequel. And I think the new additions streamline this sequel more so than all the nostalgic pieces that are thrown in there. So I would highly recommend it. And watch both versions at that, because I've seen the theatrical, Marcelo's seen the directorial, so just do both of them.
Yes, watch both. Back to back, do that. Carve out 5 hours. Watch the theatrical, then director's cut. But yeah, I mean, just to reiterate, watch this movie if you haven't. You're in the spoiler section, you're in the post-movie discussion. I don't know what you're doing with your life if you've listened to all this and have not seen the movie. But if you're at this point and you haven't seen it, please see it. If you have seen it, please go tell other people to see it.
And then when you're done, go back through Mike Flanagan's prior filmography, and then get back to us and say, and then you can thank us.
Thank us then.
Thank us later.
Yeah. I mean, for me, if you haven't seen Gerald's Game, I mean, it's on Netflix. Do that. It's incredible.
I think Before I Wake is on Netflix, and so is Hush.
Yeah, there you go. There's plenty. About that. I think you're absolutely right. There's plenty of Flanagan there to dig in if you have Netflix.
Yeah.
So please do.
And he works with Jacob Tremblay in Before I Wake, so it's definitely worth watching some more Tremblay with Flanagan.
There you go. This is a pleasure, Rachel.
Yes, as always.
Thank you. Before we wrap up. Plugs. Tell the people listening where they can find you online.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm on Twitter as Max Fishers, due to my love from the movie Rushmore. And I have just started with a segment on a podcast called From a Certain Point of View, where I review a movie of my liking or director or festival or what have you. It's just a little segment I got there. But you can find that on Spotify, Apple, I'm pretty sure, all over the place. So, and then all my writing on Talk Film Society, Ghastly Grinning, and The Farsighted.
Fantastic. Please do that, folks. honestly, please. I mean, Rachel, you're fantastic. Thank you again. And folks listening, keep watching movies. I don't have an ending. I'm just saying, hey, thanks.
Watch all the movies possible. It is spooky season.
Yes, please.